Hi, my name is Jamie Ridgway, the head coach and owner of the Renaissance Academy of Martial Arts. And today I want to tell you about some of the programs that we offer at the Academy. So in our Little Dragons programs, our 4 to 6 year old class, that class is designed for, you know, teach kids focus. You know, at that age, it's very difficult for them to focus. So we want to teach them focus. We want to teach them basic tumbling, basic martial arts skills. At the same time, you know, stranger danger, what to do if there's somebody that comes along they don't know and how to act. So we go over all those things, kind of a prep program for kids. We teach a lot of jiu-jitsu in there too. The 7 to 12 year old kids, now they're a little more mature and they're ready to start taking a big piece of the information as far as like martial arts classes. So in that class, we teach them Taekwondo blended with Muay Thai kickboxing, blended with Gracie jiu-jitsu, so that they are well-rounded. They can kick, punch, clinch, and grapple. And that's where, you know, in today's world, we see a lot of self-defense situations end up, is on the ground. So they need to know that too. So when they come out with a junior black belt, not only are they focused, but they're also well-rounded as a martial artist. And you're gonna see things like respect and self-discipline at home through the program, because that's the most important thing that we're teaching the kids. And that is, hey, we don't want them to learn all these skills and not showing respect and saying yes ma'am and no ma'am and doing their chores at home. That's really what it's all about.
Welcome back, guys. Man, I'm excited this week. So today, guys, our guest is Trinae Tweedy. She's a native citizen of Lynchburg. She grew up in Rivermont and is a graduate of E.C. Glass High School. So if you're from Lynchburg, you understand that's like you a real Lynchburgian person if you went to E.C. Glass. Following graduation, she served as a journalist in the United States Navy. Thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you very much.
After returning home, Trinae graduated from Lynchburg College, where she earned a bachelor's degree in English. She's currently pursuing a master's of business administration at the University of Lynchburg. Ms. Tweedy was first elected to city council in 2014, where she served as a vice mayor for 2 years. She was elected to be the mayor in 2018 for a 2-year term. She is the first female African-American mayor of this great city. Sojourners, please welcome our mayor, Ms. Trinae Tweedy.
Hello, everyone. Great to be here with you this evening.
Thank you so much. I think where I would like to start, Ms. Tweedy, would you like to be called like Mayor Tweedy?
Please call me Trinae.
Trinae. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Trinae, I think where we'd love to just start is just like a lot of people don't know about you.
Right.
They don't know you're the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know your service. So let's just like build a little bit about like for you, how you got, you know, to where you're at now.
Right.
So where did it all start? You're from Lynchburg. What was that like?
I am from Lynchburg, born and reared. I grew up in Rivermont. I'm actually an only child. So lived with my parents, around the corner from my grandmother, my aunt. So I had relatives nearby. Product of Lynchburg City Schools, went to what was Garland Rhodes Elementary up by Riverside Park and on to Payne School, Robert S. Payne on 12th Street, and then to Lincoln Middle and E.C. Glass. So I came through the Lynchburg City School System and I graduated and I said, I want to travel. And so kind of talked to my parents. My dad had been in the Navy and I chose the Navy. So went there, served for 3 years on a ship, USS Samuel Gompers, and I was able to become a journalist on the ship. So that's where my communications and marketing background and kind of PR background came from originally, was serving as a journalist.
Right. And you, through that, just as a sidebar, you did start like a communications consulting firm, right? From that experience?
Right. Well, I started that recently.
Nice.
So actually, once I became mayor, I needed the flexibility of my job. I was working for Goodwill Industries of the Valleys, which our corporate is in Roanoke, and we had a job center in Madison Heights. So I was a community manager and then a workforce center manager. And so that's where I really became became interested in the workforce background, workforce development for community members, programs, and so that's been in recent years. Originally, when I came home, I got married, I had children, so I actually have three adult children.
Awesome.
I'm a grandmother of two grandsons, and so I kind of just grew up with my kids around here, and we did Little League sports and had them involved in a lot of activities, and that's when I first started working for Lynchburg City Schools. And so I was the public information officer for Lynchburg City Schools, which is how I became familiar with the community and all of the organizations and a lot of residents and institutions and agencies here in the city.
Nice. Man, okay. I think that was pretty thorough. All right, so based upon that background, being an only child growing up in Lynchburg, I want to know, like, were you always, you know, as outgoing as you seem and, like, extroverted and into politics and into, like, speaking your mind and, like, you know, attacking issues?
I've always spoke my mind. But no, I really wasn't. I just watched my parents. We always, around here in the city, you go to church. And so we always went to church. I saw my parents help people, just kind of give rides to folks, help people when they needed, like, food or groceries or clothing, you know. So they were always giving. Even as a teenager, I remember that. When we were on our way to church, we picked up families, you know, and folks who didn't have a car or transportation wasn't easy for everyone. So that's the background of just knowing that when you have better or you're able to do, you're able to help. And so I saw my parents do it and other relatives. And then I grew up with taking my children to Little League. And that's when, I guess, my introduction to the city government and departments and how they serve people through Recreation League and sports started. And what I saw were that there were some people who knew how to be the boosters of the organization and help with the bringing the water to practices and help organize teams. There's some people really didn't. And so we just kind of helped become those parent boosters for our children's team, myself and other couples. And so through that, you started scheduling fields. You started seeing the interaction and engagement of Parks and Recreation with citizens. And there were noticeable differences at first, years ago. The football teams would show up and soccer teams would be playing on their fields, and no one communicated it. And so it began to have a conversation about, well, what's equity in communication and who has access to fields and why don't we have enough fields and how do we really become a partner with Parks and Recreation? So we started working with Hill City Youth Football and Cheerleading and just sitting in on those meetings and organizing from year to year. And so that's really what started my engagement with working with departments, just seeing that the kids needed fields, the kids needed someone to speak up for themselves and families. And it just sort of evolved from there. I started working for the school system, and I worked for the school system for about 9 years as the public information officer. So that was the liaison between the media and the community. And then I think I left there to work for a family business, a mentoring service. And then someone said, well, you should join the school board. And so a seat came open, and I applied and got on. So that's how I really started the public service, was first with the school board for about 6 years.
So with that fight for, like, equity and these kids and these fields, you know, and being a minority woman here in the city of Lynchburg and, you know, some of the tough situations with being a minority here in Lynchburg, did you feel like you had there's struggles for the minority people here, or did you feel personally that you had, like, some hurdles you had to kind of go over being a minority here in the city of Lynchburg?
What I felt is that people didn't have a voice. And so if they didn't have a voice at the table, they were overlooked when decisions were made or when the allocation of resources were made. So we really tried to make sure that we were at that table so that we could insert that voice of a team or of a community or of a neighborhood and say they deserve some consideration and these are the requests. And you put them in, you go through a process. Everything has a process to it. I tell people, you just don't just jump to the head of the line. You know, you may have to wait in line. You may have to work through the process of systems and decision making.
Right.
But when you do that, it works in your favor most of the time. And sometimes you do have to have a little bit of tug of war with agencies and systems, if you will. But it's about speaking up for people who were present, who were there, who had needs just like other, in this case, sports organizations. And so it was really helping to give a voice at that table.
Wow. That's good. That's good. All right. So I wanted to like go into a little bit of local versus national politics. Mm-hmm. So you're the mayor of the great city of Lynchburg, and you've been doing that for about a little over a year and a half now.
Right. I was vice mayor for 2 years, and nice. Now it's one full year as mayor.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. So as you look at like a lot of, well, I'll say this. So I did Citizens Academy to kind of like grow my understanding of local government. And for those that don't know, I did a podcast, I think episode 3 with two, Rachel and Siobhan, who did it with me, who also mm-hmm. were reporters. Mm-hmm. And we went through Citizens Academy, and it was kind of a really eye-opening experience, kind of getting to see all the aspects of local government. Mm-hmm. And what I began to realize is our national discourse is so, so, so focused on like the national and like the president and what he tweets. But you affect my day-to-day more, and the city council affects my day-to-day more.
Exactly. Local is where it gets it done.
So like, could you like just like break that down for a lot of people, like why it's important to be involved right. locally and like understand what you do? Like, people should know that you're the mayor and know right. what your vision is for the city, right. because in 5 to 10 years, we'll be living that vision, and we should want to know that we were for it.
Right. Yeah. And well, really, people have to understand that local politics affects them the most. It's the roadways you drive down. It's the agencies, the public service, safety, the police and fire that serve you. Who mm-hmm. picks up your trash, your parks and recreation? How are your communities and neighborhoods developed? What's the strategic plan for placing sidewalks and housing growth or apartment growth going on throughout the city? So all of that is affected by the local leaders. And so it's really important who you elect to office. You probably could have people that only care about green spaces, which are important, and roadways and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But it's also, a city is made up of people. And so you have to think about how are your citizens growing? How are your neighborhoods growing? And does everyone have opportunities in the city? So I'm just a leader that cares about people, cares about the success of families and individuals. And so recently we did learn when I was first on the first campaign in 2014, the campaign trail, that our poverty rate was very high. So fortunately it became an issue during that campaign trail. And my focus at the time was education and workforce and community engagement and volunteerism. So I was really understanding that because I worked in the area of workforce development, we have a lot of people here who just don't have the skills and the training credentials to get into higher wage paying jobs. And so how do you get that for folks when we have federal dollars that come in for training, that come in to support workforce development, but people don't know about it? Mm-hmm. And so fortunately it became a big topic for everyone running. Vice mayor at the time, and then she became mayor, and then I served with her as vice mayor. Joan Foster and I started the conversation of poverty and what does that mean and look like in our city. And so I am happy to say that the issue of poverty, we are trending downward in our poverty numbers.
That's awesome.
And so I can't attribute it exactly to what we're doing, but we believe that the awareness of poverty rate being so high in our city, and the fact that people, we're talking to folks about increasing their education, increasing their family median income household, their household income. We are talking to them about, we want our poverty rate lowered. We want families to have opportunities. We were fortunate enough to have in our city an organization called Beacon of Hope. And so that works with our students in the school system, and Beacon of Hope supporters and donors have enabled graduates from 2019 to 2024 currently can attend our local Central Virginia Community College for free. And so that is a huge opportunity for graduates coming out of high school, our seniors, because we have an issue of intergenerational poverty here. And so if we can attack it at the level of our seniors graduating and getting the skills and the training, the education needed to grow their success in the future, and then we can work with parents, we can work with others in the households through our workforce development, then we believe we can lower and hopefully sustain the lowering of the poverty rate in our city.
So touching on that poverty rate and just kind of like that deep issue here. So I'm curious for you, like when you think about Lynchburg in 5 to 10 years, you're casting that vision. So, okay, so what's the poverty rate now? Like what's that number?
Right.
Where do you want it to be? Right. And then when you're saying like, hey, we want to raise the median income, I'm assuming that you want to bring businesses in. Like what? So what is your vision for that? Like, so in 5 to 10 years, our poverty rate was here to here.
Right.
We have more commerce here. I think we were talking before we started, you're expecting 8,000 more people in the city of
Lynchburg? Right. The most recent Weldon Cooper Center study from UVA says that we're going to grow to maybe about 90,000 residents by 2030. And so for me, at the state of the city, we talked about how we want to grow as a city and find success for everyone, but it's really what I kind of cast out there as Vision 2025.
Right.
So if you think about it, in say 6 years, which is not that far, we really want people to understand that the plans we're putting in place now, the attention we're giving, we kind of look at it as a month by month, a day by day type of vision. But it's really about where do we want our community? We have businesses right here in our city that can't find the skilled workforce. They can't find the people who are trained in, as welders and machinists and electricians and plumbers. So the vocational skills are very important. And they can make great dollars.
That's very true.
If they would learn those trades.
Welding
and so
is a very well-paying job.
It's huge. You can almost write your own ticket once you get experience and under your belt. So the fact is that there's opportunities, there are education programs that shorten the length of time where people can learn the basics of those vocational programs, and then companies will train them specifically for what the companies need. But we have to get people to dream bigger. I asked someone recently, we were at one of the programs that was held biweekly in the summer going out to different communities. And I said, what's your dream? A young lady. And she said, I don't dream. And that is a problem. People have to have vision for themselves. They have to dream. They have to have desire to be some type of profession or in a career at some point. And then life presents challenges. People have children. They get bogged down with transportation and childcare. And how do you make it all work? So that's why we form those committees that to address the barriers that people run into when you look at a person that's trying to get to their next best life, and they just find it difficult. And so sometimes it's about motivation, it's about giving people hope, but it's also about helping them navigate. How do I get my children to daycare, to my medical appointments when I'm trying to navigate the transportation, the cost of it, and all of that?
Right.
So it's really looking at the holistic approach to individuals, their lives, their dreams, helping them understand we have all of the resources in our community for people to get where they want to go far as a dream.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have some of these, you touched on some really cool developmental, I guess, initiatives that you want. Mm-hmm. So are you, for example, you said, man, the trades are something that for our underprivileged, our more impoverished areas of this, of Lynchburg, which, you know, in Lynchburg is a unique place where it's like kind of in just these pockets. And it's really, you know, very the same kind of minority, you know, very highly African-American areas. And that's sad. And so I'm thinking like, you know, for some of the things you were talking about, are you working with like schools to start doing like a partnership with like, you know, what's the Virginia, the trade school that we have like here, the community college trade school that does
Central Virginia Community College has programs, but we also have the Virginia Technical Institute, which is in Alta Vista.
Yes.
And we also work with the workforce programs. And yes, so we are creating more partnerships. Actually, the first meeting has been held for the leadership of the City Schools Task Force for studying education and the future of Lynchburg for pre-K and beyond. And so we are actually and have formed a task force that will be meeting over the next year to understand how do we navigate our students and families within our school system to access the opportunities that are available, as well as how do we build a school system for the future. So we have a lot of small neighborhood schools, so that cost a lot of money to operate. It's in individual staffs, utilities, and so we have to think about what type of buildings do our students need. We have students who unfortunately need some trauma-informed care, and trauma tends to kind of halt a little bit of young adults and cause them just some growing pains a little bit from elementary to high school. So
can you unpack that one section? I'm sorry to pause you there. I just like that word, just like, whoa. So trauma, are you saying that, like, so there are students that are going to school and you believe that they have some trauma from their
childhood, just
and we need to help them with some counseling during school.
There needs to be more mental health and health awareness our children and our families. And so this task force will be made up of citizens from across the community, as well as professionals. We have potential for CEOs to be involved, because what you find now in 2019 is that companies don't just move to a city because they said, oh, we want to move to Lynchburg because it seems like a great place. Mm-hmm. They move to places where their workers will have a great quality of life, their employees. And so the school system is important. The neighborhoods, how we are developing as a city is important to employers. We also don't have huge manufacturing companies that are moving into cities like ours. We have a region of about 250,000 people, but we have to still have a region and a workforce that can support the need of the companies. So you have your Amazon that moved to Northern Virginia, and so we have to become a region that employers seek us out because of the labor force we have, and the quality of life. And that's why we have to make sure our education system is providing that employee-based, that we have skilled workers and education and a quality of life, meaning people love our school system. We have the programs that support what employers need. And we also have the development and the growth in a city that gives the quality of life that a business would want to relocate here, just as much as we have several businesses that their corporate is not in Lynchburg. So that means that the corporate could decide, well, Lynchburg's not providing us with the employee workforce base we need. They could move to any other city or region that is. So we have to help keep our local employers here and make sure that their businesses are thriving as well.
That's good. Okay, so just continue on this like trend of like the local and the initiatives and the different things that you're seeing. One question I wanted to just jump back on is, so as you're attacking the poverty initiative and you're looking at, you know, the Beacon of Hope, there's the Lighthouse, which I've partnered with personally and really want to promote more of the things that they're doing. And they're looking at, you know, these dome style, low cost, affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And so affordable housing is a very, very big issue nationally. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, with this local versus national, which is the kind of like the topic we're on right now, when you look at Lynchburg and a lot of people that can't, and as we grow, 8,000 people coming in, better paying jobs, more young people downtown, you're going to see the gentrification start to happen.
Right.
So is this a way that are you looking to partner with, what Finney and, and what Ms. Martha are doing at the Lighthouse to build these low cost dome style housing? They're cheap, long term. They look like they're great when I met with them. So is that something that you're a part of, or for you, you know, is gentrification something that you want to attack in a different way?
I would say that we have to look at all of our options. The Lighthouse is great with working with our homeless population. Mm-hmm. They have recently opened a veterans home. They have a home for citizens who are returning back from incarceration.
That's right.
And so they work with a case management style of persons living in the homes. They also have the dome homes, as we call them, and the planning for that. And so I know that they've looked in areas of our city for that, and they've met with city staff just for how does that affect community development. Is everything according to regulation and current policies, or do we have to look at things in the future? We also have a housing collaborative that has been in existence for over 20 years in Lynchburg. And so along with that is also the planning of organizations such as Miriam's House, with Rapid Rehousing, LinCAG with renovation and redevelopment in our neighborhoods of current housing stock, as well as Rush Homes that develops for persons with intellectual disabilities or physical disabilities. And so you have to look at the Housing Collaborative. They recently presented to City Council an affordable housing report. So it gives down to the number of affordable housing units we need in our city, which was over 500 plus. And so recently a meeting was held with area local businesses. And in November, I say because our schedule is a little tight sometimes, but in November, City Council will be meeting with the Lynchburg Redevelopment and Housing Authority to discuss the white paper that was presented by community development and different departments within the city to talk about best practices from other cities, from other localities of how they've tackled affordable housing. So the meeting in November between City Council and the Redevelopment and Housing Authority Board, which is the housing arm of City Council, it will probably be the first time we've had a retreat together, a meeting, to discuss this issue. And so it's how do we move forward in our planning and our development for the planning of building more affordable units. We have a lot of housing stock in our city that's dilapidated, especially in our urban core neighborhoods.
That's right.
And so how do we better plan for that housing stock? Do we bring in developers? Does the nonprofit of our housing development, housing authority, become the developer and partner with other local agencies? And so all of that will be discussed at our first meeting in November. But it is because the work of the collaborative and those folks who brought the housing report to us. And so right now in the city, we have a lot of balls rolling at the same time. But it is all because we can chew and walk and chew gum at the same time, basically. We can think about these issues that would grow in the negative way if we don't address them now, because you have to have a plan. We are a city of 50 square miles, and that's our size. So we really can't expand out. We are going to have to find a way to grow up.
And why can't we
expand to people? Well, because we have annexed as much county space as they're probably going to allow us. So that's right. We are not able to annex any more of our local partners and neighbors. And we don't want to do that. We are a regional partner. And so it's about building a great quality of life and solving our issues within our city. And so the best way to do that is to meet, address, and begin planning. We have the housing coordinator now and gave us a report with the housing authority, because I do sit on the housing authority board. And we have a number of seniors who are becoming homeless more so nowadays. And it's because their incomes are not expanding with what the cost of living and medical and all of that. And so our growing number of homeless are seniors. So we have to look at how are we helping to find affordable housing units for them, and who can we encourage to partner, and what does that mean for a city? And as leaders, we have to address that, and maybe we have to begin doing business differently in these areas. But we do know where our poverty lies. We do know that gentrification is real, and so people are concerned about that as well. And so we have to begin to have the plans in place or the policies or regulation or conversation that says we want to maintain the heritage and tradition of our neighborhoods and create neighborhoods where people feel like they're thriving. How do we utilize our centers in our neighborhoods, and how do we build better programming? And also build the resources and put that in place so that people are aware of the opportunity to stay in the neighborhoods.
So when, man, this is so good. This is like, I feel like we're really getting this thing going. I'm starting to think, like, for you, you know, Ms. Trini, like, if you think back to your time as as mayor, and you're going through all these initiatives, right? I see your heart for the underprivileged, for the people that have low resources. I'm just curious, like, for you, like, what is, if your legacy could be wrapped up in one victory, like, you know, in politics, what I've begun to learn is there's very little victories. There's a lot of bipartisanship if you really want something. And so when you get something that you was like, just like a cornerstone thing for you, you know, for example, like Barack Obama, it was Obamacare. So for you, what would be your legacy where it'd be like, you know, hey, she dropped you know, right. poverty by 10%, or right. she, the food desert issue in downtown Lynchburg, right. she ended it,
right.
or the I education.
I want people trained and educated in skills that will create long-term career success for them. And so I know that, you know, people, I have certain council members who say, well, the poor will always be with you. Well, you know, people have to work 40 hours a week. They have to get married. They can't have kids. And I get that, you know, people make decisions along the way. But at the end of the day, we have to give people those opportunities to increase their skills and their training and their education, and particularly our young folks, because they have so many more years to go. And so we have to increase their education, their skills, so that they can get the jobs. And you really have to look at where are we now as far as technology, information technology, cybersecurity jobs. I want people to think farther out than just going to work day to day. I want them to create careers for themselves and not just jobs. So we recently, by about a month, the city has hired a youth futures coordinator. Youth futures coordinator. And somebody might say, well, what is that?
Yeah.
that person is, I call her the glue right now. She's actually getting her feet wet by meeting with other departments, by meeting with the school system, the workforce regional programs, so that one, they know she's there, she knows their programming. How are we solidifying the partnerships? How are we creating opportunities for cohort groups of young people up to age 24 to be successful, to find the job? Sometimes the young folks get caught up and they have felonies, they have different career background issues, background experiences that cause them not to be able to walk through the doors of certain employers, but that hurts the employer and it hurts individuals in our community. So she will be a person that currently is working out of the city manager's office, but in the future there's a plan for her to be working out of a center, particularly College Hill Center, so that people within the center of the city can understand how to walk in the doors and ask the questions for workforce development, for career opportunities, and there are answers for them. There's also a navigational process that they would go through. Because we have some folks who really have some soft skills training. They need what I call the more urban, hardcore soft skills training. And that's what we plan to deliver in that area. And so economic development has the tech hire program. We have entrepreneurship opportunities and programs, because a lot of people that have challenges to working and to increasing their incomes, sometimes they need to learn how to become entrepreneurs.
Come on.
And that is something that is not talked about a lot. It's not just always going to work for someone. It's creating their own business opportunity. So that's what I'd like to be known for in the future. Or I guess if you kind of hang my hat on something, it would be that we increased folks' opportunity for education and training. We introduce more entrepreneurship opportunities to them. And it's taken a while to get this in place, but it's coming, so that by the end of the year, people will know that, you know, you stick with it and we're going to stick with you to create that long-term success.
Gosh, that...
Now, not a lot of people know all of these things going on, and that's why I was impressed with you all and when you decide to come through Citizens Academy, because you get to learn a lot more of the inside of what's happening with departments, how they affect your day-to-day, what decisions are being made, how are the long-term plans built. And so, you know, this is just something that working with businesses and employers and understanding neighborhoods and communities, it really takes long-term planning. Sometimes government, the wheels move very slow.
Yes.
And so even for the Youth Futures Coordinator, it took a couple of budget years to get her position in the budget. But the fact that she's in there and she's hired and she's beginning to work, these are the things that we are moving forward on in plans. And fortunately, we have a city staff that understands you have to do all of this and be very thoughtful in the planning and the process, because you're helping support and build and increase the growth and opportunity for the future of your city.
Right.
These things you won't see the results this year, next year. It'll take a few years, but we believe investing now will give the results later.
Okay, let me ask one more local, and then we'll move to a little bit more of the national scene. So for you, with all these initiatives and all this investment, do you see, you know, with us being one of the highest tax burden cities in the state, do you see that, you know, I'm going to have to keep revenue neutral for a long time? I'm going to have to increase taxes. I'm going to have to build this center, because, you know, you have this now role, this amazing role. But I know with government that, like, to build that into a center and department to give her staff and to help her be able to reach the people, it's going to cost money. Mm-hmm. And so are you looking at other resources or maybe cutting things that we spend a lot of money on that maybe could be repurposed or not done anymore?
Well, what I would tell you is no one wants to hear the dreaded raise taxes verbiage. That is for sure. But what I always ask people is, what are you willing to do without? And so, you know, it's not right now. We have been able to sustain some of the programming through grant opportunities at the state level. And so the ability to apply for grants that will fund positions. With the current Youth Futures Coordinator, she will be working with Parks and Recreation current staff and just kind of getting everyone introduced to what are the opportunities that they then become another layer of education and relationship building through their own jobs and in their neighborhoods that they serve. So that's the networking approach we're doing right now. But again, I always tell people, no one wants their taxes raised. I'm a taxpayer with property just like everyone else.
Right.
But we all want a lot of services. So the first question I ask during budget season, because people say, don't raise my taxes, or, well, what would you like to do without or less of? You know, is it pick up your trash 3 days a week, 2 days a week? Is it cut some parks and recreation opportunities? The first thing people say is, well, we don't need all of the parks and recreation opportunities, or we don't need all of the school services. Well, what people forget is that when you cut parks and rec, that cuts children. And then when you talk about cutting education, that again, the same people are going to be affected. So it's about thinking strategically about not cutting services, but maybe you can lessen some services. But you have to survey, you have to talk to people, you have to look at the data of what's being used in our community and how much of it. And then we have a lot of our services are reliant upon people. And so you have to make salaries competitive. You have to pay people for the work they do. And when people commit and dedicate the years and the time and the jobs, and we've had a couple of rough years with a lot of water and a lot of weather issues. And so we've had people, especially in our public works department, our fire and safety, and they've worked really hard. And so you want to compensate them for the work that they've done. So it's an investment. It's not always that it's draining from the citizens, but it's that to live in that city that has a great quality of life, that people feel safe, protected, they feel as though their roadways and the operations and services are being delivered, they have to see the taxes that they're paying as an investment. Because I would not want to live in a community where we did not take care of our employees and we did not offer those services that people have come to benefit from and enjoy. So,
okay. Mm-hmm. So let's move to more national. So,
oh no,
I know we got,
like to get work done locally. I don't know about nationally,
but I think that like national does affect our local discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that like when we look at, our city and, you know, I'm going to hopefully be having our police chief on in the next couple of weeks. And so I think it's important, though, that we do at least be aware of what's going on nationally. But again, for those listening, Sojourners, like the one of the things I want you to realize is like this is what's beautiful about local government and the local politics, that I get to sit down with my mayor and get to learn about her initiatives and what she wants to do and see what her goals are and really get to really understand what affects my day to day. But national is also as important because it gets highly covered. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is when we look at the national conversation, right? One of the big things has always been like with policing and the African American community. And again, you know, the areas that we want to see better in Lynchburg are highly swing to the African-American community. And it's at the heart of the African-American community to see that change and see that growth. And like you said, generationally, we've seen people just stuck in poverty. What is your view on you know, the national discourse with policing and the African American community. And as you look at Lynchburg, you know, is there some things that you've put in that you're saying, like, hey, with, you know, Police Chief Zunima, we're not going to be a city that does this, or I don't believe in this initiative, or we want to treat our citizens in this, our citizens in this way.
Right. I would have to go back to years ago. There was an incident in one of our communities that caused some racial division and conversation. And so with the previous mayor, Joan Foster, she had served, she served as mayor twice. And so during one of maybe her first term, there was a gentleman who was killed in one of the neighborhoods. And so that sparked the conversation on race and what went happen with that particular situation. And so they had a dialogue on race and racism, a citywide dialogue. When people came together, they had several meetings, they had several broke out in different groups to talk about it. And so I would credit that for happening several years ago, which opened the conversation about race and how the relationship is between our officers, our citizens, and our neighborhoods. And then the national conversation started growing and becoming greater with various incidents. So I would say in our community, because of that conversation with the previous city manager and staff being citywide, that we were having the conversation a little ahead of time of communities. And so it built the foundation to say that we appreciate community policing. We would like to have better relationships with officers. The leadership understands that. And so with Chief Diaz, who began several programs to build that relationship within the community, talking to more citizens, being present, creating opportunities to have neighborhood events, neighborhood conversations. That's why this summer and last summer, based on shootings that occurred in our community, the police, the sheriff, the fire department, along with One Voice in One Community, several church faith organizations came together and said every week at last summer, this summer was every couple of weeks, we're picking a different neighborhood and we're going to go out. And it's just breaking bread together, but it's bringing all of the agencies out into the neighborhood to say, this is what's important. See something, say something. Let's talk about what's going on. Let's connect people to resources. We perish for the lack of knowledge in a lot of instances. And to understand that these folks who are responsible for our public safety, they actually care about our citizens, our residents, our communities. And so if we can have that dialogue, that connectivity, that relationship building, I think it helps us here in our city. And so I've seen other people in the area from Roanoke to Martinsville to do similar activities. And so I think the more we work together and try to understand each other and understand the day-to-day lives of the citizens and neighborhoods, the better it is to be an officer serving or a firefighter serving or a sheriff serving. And so that dialogue and conversation happened early on in Lynchburg. And I think we're seeing the growth of it now come. Can we stop all criminal activities that's occurring? No. But people know that they have the leadership, that they can reach out and talk to their officers. They can stop an officer on the street and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking happening. Or they have avenues where they can call into and give information or share information or just talk about what's happening and how can we make it better. And that's why I think we had to have the conversation about the youth and our futures and where are the doors of opportunity that they can see themselves so that they're not going down negative paths. They don't see that it's just what they see right before them. Mm-hmm. It's actually opportunities there. And so another part of that is making all of our agencies understand our police and our fire. What are the workforce opportunities available for people so that when they're out there, they're policing, they're doing their day-to-day job, they actually have resource brochures. They have information they can hand to people so that it's not just, you know, the people see them as the law coming. They can actually see them as a resource as well.
Yeah, and I respect Police Chief Zunima and the police department doing that national police
National Night Out against crime.
Against crime. And I thought it was really cool to see, like, yo, our policemen are out. They're about, you can shake their hand. You can get to know them. Mm-hmm. We did Citizens Academy, and they have a police academy, which is like Citizens Academy, where you get to learn about the police. And I think what was cool to our Citizens Academy is like ours got a little contentious, and I respect that the police officers were willing to have a conversation, to hear, you know, people that were hurting, people that were frustrated with certain things that had happened within their sections of this city. And they were willing to talk to them about that. And, you know, really with respect, really trying to handle that situation. And then to come out in the community and, like, get to know people, shake hands, eat food. I really like that kind of, like, synergy between, you know, it's not just a dude with a gun and a badge. Mm-hmm. It's actually like, oh, that's, you know... Right. Mr. Fink, his wife owns Celebration Bridal, and they're doing great things in this community. Oh, that's Police Chief Zunima, but also his son goes to RAM, you know, Renaissance exactly. Academy Martial Arts, and we're both learning jujitsu and doing it together. And it's like mm-hmm. we're really a part of this community, and it kind of removes this like authoritative or authoritarian feel to it
right.
That I think sometimes is a struggle for certain communities to be able right. to like find good.
And I know personally, I did go through, at the time, the police academy for citizens was 10 weeks. And so I went through that just like you went through the Citizens wow. Academy. And I gained a new appreciation personally as a council member and a person who was just a community volunteer at the time. But as an advocate for understanding now that police want to go home to their families as well at the end of a shift, at the end of the day. And so a lot of the things that we don't understand behind the job, there is rationale as to why they do the things they do. And so, you know, you would be... I would be remiss if I didn't say that sometimes there are some biases. But when you look at different neighborhoods and depending on what's going with their level of the crime rate and that sort of thing, again, officers want to go home. They want to be safe. But they also understand that that is a community that they are working in. And so building those relationships is important for residents to think that they can approach officers, like you said, and understand where they're coming from just as much. Officers have a job to do. And as a community, we want a patrol, a force that that keeps our safety at the forefront and keeps us protected. So it's a balance, and they are caught in the middle of that balance. But I think our leadership here does a great job. I think they partner well with the community, and we're seeing the results of that in our community.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Here's another one for you. Let's go get a little okay. bit more content. A little bit. I don't know. You might like it.
He's throwing me some curveballs.
I'm throwing
y'all.
You some curveballs. I'm just curious if you're willing to give your opinion okay. on 2020, big year. You're up for re-election in 2020, right?
Well, actually, amongst my council members, right, for mayor. So
right.
The council decides who's mayor and vice mayor. My seat, I'm actually on council until 2022. So
nice.
I would not run a campaign again until 2022 citywide. But for right now, I'm there till
okay.
then.
Okay. Okay. So you're sitting back and relaxing in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So are you willing to give an opinion on the Democratic, you know, people that are running in 2020, and what you think, like, where the country's going? Do you see a front runner? Do you see someone that you like? Do you see someone that you're like, don't have a chance?
Right now, I think I'm just listening to everyone's ideas, what their plans are. We have a lot of racial division in our country that needs some healing. And so I think we need a leader that works to bring people together and understands that maybe we do need some policy changes or some strategies to deal with what are truly problems in our community. But I think we need strong leaders who will stand up for right and who will speak up when they see things are wrong and who are able to bring both parties together. Right now, you know, there are independents, there are Democrats, and there are Republicans. And so I think we need someone, strong voices that can bring everyone together around the issues that are very important as a whole in our nation. When we look at the gun violence, when we look at the tragedies that have occurred in El Paso and in Ohio, it is sad. And I think we have a country that is feeling that, but at this moment, the people are ready to move forward with whatever is the legislation or the policy opportunities that will help us heal and help us prevent these tragedies. And so I hope there are leaders that will come together. No one wants to take away gun rights or the Second Amendment, but we have to admit that there's something wrong in our country. And so what do we need to do after Sandy Hook and so many others? What do we need to do to bring people and our leaders to the table and say, you have to do this for the citizens, because the citizens are hurting.
Hmm. Speaking on that, you know, the racial divide and the pain of this country, I believe this month is the 400-year anniversary of the first African-American slaves touching the shore of this great country. What do you think about that, you know, as the first female African-American woman in the city of Lynchburg, this 400-year anniversary? I don't know if you've planned something for the city. I know I have one of my good friends, Chad Gobar, is doing a film documentary about that. And so there's a lot of, like, I'm sure films and movies and things going to be dropping in the next month or two. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you feel that, the weight of that? Do you feel the weight of, you're a part of history. Right. You know, you're a part of Lynchburg's history. Right. And you're a part of, I think, the healing of this city and the healing of America. Mm-hmm. You being in the position that you are, that, you know, someone will find hope and joy in that. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that 400-year history, do you see, like, hey, we're heading to a place of healing,
right,
and we're far better off than 1619?
We are far better off than 1619. I think it took us too long to find the equality that should have been here from the beginning. Hmm. And so I think myself and others who are first generation leaders or first African Americans, you know, we're not really the first. We stand on the shoulders of a lot of people who had the resiliency, who stood their ground, who were leaders before we were even thought of. And so I think we have to respect the work and often the tears that they had to shed and the blood they had to give. And it shouldn't have taken us, we shouldn't have gone through all of that, the oppression, the suppression, the voter rights, Jim Crow. I mean, you know, just redlining. There were so many things done to affect persons of color, African Americans. And so I don't want history to repeat itself and find oppression or suppression of persons with color and brown folks, because we are incredible people. And so I think when you have generations that are suppressed and oppressed because of their color, because of income inequality, because of regulations, it suppresses the creativity, their ability to think that they can own the world. They just have the opportunity and the freedom. When you take people's freedom away, it takes their dreams away. And so I'm a dreamer. I hope I'm a visionary in some respect. And I think it's important for everyone to share the equality and the freedom that we deserve in 1619. And I think we're just catching up now to what has been done by policy and regulation. And so we don't want to go back there. And so I think it's important for everyone to vote, to stand up, and to speak for the freedoms that you enjoy, because it's a pen stroke away that it could be taken away in the reality. And so I think we have to understand the history, understand the heritage, but also grow from the mistakes that others made, the lack of appreciation of equality for everyone. And so we don't want history repeated. That's what I tell people. So you work hard, you express your voice, you exercise your right to vote so that you're always counted and you're always a part of those laws and regulations that are being made.
Hmm. All right. Man, Miss Tweedy, she's killing it, man. Yes. Thank you so much for being here, man. I want to finish up with, like, just some chances for you to speak to some people, you know, for those listening. I want you to first, just like from your whole career, you've had an amazing career. I'm sure you're going to continue to succeed in anything that you do. What are some characteristics that you have found the most useful as you've risen to mayor and, you know, wherever it takes you next politically? Do you hope to continue on in politics and move up, senator, whatever, in your career? And what characteristics have you found that have been most useful to get you to where you are now?
Right. I'm not sure what the future plans are right
no
now.
No announcements? No.
Right now, no Come announcements.
On. No, no podcast
no,
exclusive?
No announcements. We'll come back in the future if I decide anything. But no, right now I'm enjoying being mayor. Right now I want to complete some of those projects, some of those initiatives we have going, the Vision 2025. I want people to feel good about where we hope to be by then. So there are things that I want to continue to work on right now. And then as far as I've tell people, there's no substitute for hard work. So you have to be a person that cares about people. You have to be able to understand someone else's shoes that they walk in. You know, if you don't understand, be willing to learn what their viewpoints are, what their opinions are, and listen. Sometimes people will say, well, I don't want to hear what they have to say. Well, sometimes you need to hear what other people's viewpoints are, because it helps to create a more holistic approach for your own thought process. And so I tell people there's no substitute for hard work. If you want to be a leader or a community advocate, always find the opportunity to volunteer somewhere, whether it's a nonprofit, whether it's for a board or commission that is appointed by city council. Because the more you learn about the community you live in, the more you're able to help it, the more you're able to be a volunteer and to help others. And so it's important for people to realize that you don't just wake up and decide you want to be a council member, or you want to be a school board member, or you want to be the mayor or vice mayor or any other position. It usually takes a little bit of work, a little bit of research, a little bit of getting your hands dirty and getting in the middle of whatever it is that's going on, whether it's serving. Because I will tell people, politics really doesn't pay. So you really do a lot of volunteer time. It's a lot of meetings. It's meeting with different organizations throughout the city. And so, but once you get your feet wet, once you begin to understand what the issues are, you hear all of the voices, then you're able to better become a leader that knows the issues, that has that toolbox, if you will, of maybe some answers, or you know who to go to in order to find those answers. And so you always put yourself in the position of learning and of working hard.
That's good. That's real good. Okay, if you could pick one person currently living and one person in the past that has impacted you the most, who would they be?
Wow, that's a hard question. I have to say, probably more recently, our most recent past president, President Obama.
Okay.
And I say that because he led during a challenging time for himself. As the first African American president of the free world, the United States, he was leading at a time when it was very challenging for him. And so to see him be as cool as he was under the pressure and under the challenge and facing the adversity that he was given, I learned some lessons there of how to go, you know, not to let people change who you are, and to maintain that coolness, that ability to think under pressure, to bring people together, to deliver the messages that people need to hear, to offer some healing, some empathy, some care and concern. So he was a good, great, recent leader, I would say. I also learned from people like President before him, Bush, because he led during challenging times. I was around with kids in elementary school when 9/11 hit. And so I was actually working for the school system on the day of 9/11. And so he had to come together for a country and to exhibit leadership in a way that even under pressure, working across the aisles, getting things done. And so we needed that at that time. And so you look at those leaders and I say, you know, there are lessons to be learned from both. And then when you think about the past, there's so many. I don't think I can just say one person.
Right.
But there were just so many who just took the pressure. And that's the biggest thing. There's no change without pressure. And so it's like people always give me the example of a diamond coming from a piece of coal. Without the pressure, we wouldn't have that diamond. And so you have to be a person that is willing to stand in adversity and take the pressure, but always be a forward thinker. Because you know it's not for always. And so just to be able to maintain that idea of how to navigate, how to build for the future, how to incorporate different opinions and viewpoint to get the best product. And that it's not always about you. It's about the people you serve. So.
All right, last one.
Okay.
If you could talk to all the amazing, beautiful, handsome people of Lynchburg, mm-hmm. with all their fears, watching, you know, El Paso, watching everything that we've seen in the last couple of years, they see the division, they see the fear, they see also a lot of good things too as well, mm-hmm. and they see their little city of Lynchburg, and they have hopes and dreams for this place. I know people that have come here and build roots. I have a close friend of mine who's having his first daughter mm-hmm. here in this city. And, you know, that daughter's going to grow up with you as the mayor. Mm-hmm. What would be your message to them as they look towards the future, these next 10 years? Right. What would be like your address to them?
I think I told people recently, I spoke at the community college graduation, and I tell people we get one life. We get one life. Every day we get an opportunity to get up, and it's not like yesterday, and it leads us into tomorrow. Don't fear. Don't let fear hold you back from reaching further, from striving towards your goals, because generations have lived through some horrendous tragedies, some horrendous things that could have held them back. But there's always tomorrow. And so you don't fear. When you fear, then you limit your opportunities and your possibilities. So I believe in taking every challenge on and you know, I did the ninja, I did the dunking booth. That's a once in a lifetime thing, you know, but I've become the veteran. I decided to be a school board member. I decided to be a politician, and now I was mayor. If I was fearful of maybe I'm not ready for it, maybe I can't challenge myself, then I wouldn't have had the opportunity. So I don't start with fear. I start with opportunity. I start with the knowing that if I put my best foot forward, I did my best. And so that's what people have to realize. Everyone has the opportunity to learn. You ask questions. You gain the experiences. But you don't let fear hold you back. And so we just have to put our best hat on every morning and get out there and have faith that today will be a better day, tomorrow will be better. And I have a wise mother who just told me, hey, you know, the people that are very challenging to us now, there were some other people who had other names in previous years. And she said, you know what? We live through it all. So it's about enjoying yourself. It's about challenging yourself. It's about not fearing to grow. And we have to believe that as a community, as a nation, and as a city, we're going to grow together, and it's going to be for the positive.
Sojourners, do not let fear stop you. As our mayor, Ms. Trene, said, this has been an amazing podcast. I hope you guys can glean some wheat from the chaff of this conversation. I think there was a lot of really, really, really good things said, and a lot of eye-opening things. And I think for those who are not from the city of Lynchburg, I hope that you would feel encouraged to reach out to your mayor, reach out to the local politicians, your city council, see if your city has a citizens academy, be a part of that, be a part of your community, be a part of the good that God is doing in your community, and don't be afraid to step out and give some time to. All right.